And they play in February on the 7th. Of course, the NFL Super Bowl is February 11th. Now the forecast details from the National Weather Service for today, Friday the 2nd. Cloudy for the morning, sunny and mild for the afternoon, high of 40. Right now, a little bit of a breeze from the northeast at 10. Overcast sky, 37, Kenosha, 36 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We have a packed house today in the on-air studio and a very, very fun topic to discuss, namely the recent tour which the Carthage College Wind Orchestra took to Japan. And this is an adventure which occurs every several years with the group and with their fearless leader, Dr. James Ripley, a faculty colleague of mine at Carthage. And he has brought with him five members of the Wind Orchestra who are also part of this amazing trip. John Cargill, Vinnie David, Ella Monk, Rosie Ale, and Jack Kelly. And so we're going to be finding out from them just all of the things that they saw and did and experienced on this trip. And we also, in effect, also are previewing for you their homecoming concert, which is going to be taking place this Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock, in Carthage's Siebert Chapel. We welcome all of you to the morning show. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, Greg. It's great to be here and great to have our students with us for this interview.
Absolutely. Glad to have everybody, and thank you for getting up bright and early. Dr. Ripley, maybe we could begin by having you explain a little bit about this intriguing connection between Carthage College's Wind Orchestra and the nation of Japan. I think it has something to do with your own connection to the nation of Japan, which I know goes back quite a ways.
It does, and it's been a joy to travel with the band now seven times to Japan, starting back in 2004. The experience began actually for me as a student and then later as a teacher at the Eastman School of Music, where we went on tour, and in 1998 I was able to travel for the first time and did a series of clinics while the band was on tour. One of those spots was in Kurashiki, which has Sakuyo University there, and I was then offered a position, actually initially as full-time, which I couldn't take, but as a guest faculty. So for 10 years, I was involved there twice a year working with their Wind Philharmonie. And as part of that experience, I thought it would be a great opportunity for our students to, first of all, meet the students at Sakuyo and be a part of a joint venture, which then turned into a touring opportunity later. But it's been that connection, primarily with the university there, that has brought us back on all of those wonderful occasions.
Fantastic. So when you went to Japan the first time with Eastman, that was after your days as a student?
It was, actually. I was just finishing up and starting then as the assistant director at the college. And it just happened to work out that I was starting at Carthage about the same time that they wanted to have me as guest faculty.
Wow. Tell us a little more about this school in Japan that you've already mentioned, kind of its size and what sort of a school it is, and maybe the ways in which it both bears similarity and maybe probably some striking differences with Carthage.
That's a wonderful question. There's three quick things about that. The first is the college has actually moved. It shares some of that tradition of having been in a location which wasn't easy to get to, which wasn't easily supportive of the school, and so they actually did make a transition to this city called Kurashiki, which is about 20th, I think, in the ranking of cities in Japan. So it's not a small city, but it's not large, but it's a really nice place, situated between Osaka and Hiroshima and close to Okayama. It kind of has this wonderful location, but as far as the particularness, it's a school that has really just two different focuses. There's the music school, and then there's the culinary school. And so we have some really great parties there as far as all of the food that comes from the university to support the event. And so those things then further focus into the college as a conservatory. It's really the conservatory for the western part of the country.
Great. Did you say this is trip number 7 that Carthage has taken to Japan?
It is.
So I assume that most of those trips have been largely the same?
Yes, it have.
And just shape in general for us, describe in general for us what these trips have typically entailed.
There are three primary focuses as we go through this. We always have a residency at Sakuyo University where we're able to rehearse some and then play a program there, always as an exchange so that we also have a combined piece and we get a chance to hear each other play as well. So there's that exchange concert. Then we have sightseeing that usually goes to the more historic parts of the country. So we're in Kyoto, we're in Nara, we go to Miyajima Island. And so there's this part that if you just go to Japan and go to Tokyo the whole time, you never really see much of the real historic and cultural centers that are in this other area of the country. And we always have a stay in Hiroshima. That is always very important to us to be able to visit the Peace Park there and the museum and just experience that part of the history of the country as well. So those have been the center parts. We have been to Tokyo before, but typically that's been a shorter visit.
Right. And how often does this trip happen, and does it very regularly happen?
It's been centered around 3 years, so it fits within the college's cycle of January terms. And there's been a few times when we've done it on the fourth year, including this last one, because of COVID delaying things a year.
Right. So when it's time to go to Tokyo, I mean, it sounds like nearly everybody in the wind orchestra went and was able to go, but I assume it's nothing you can necessarily require of every student to go. I mean, what sort of determines whether or not a student can go, or and how much of the group will be able to be part of this experience?
We're lucky that the college has supported international travel for Carthage students for a long time. And I think that's the thing that really makes it generally possible for most of the students to go, is that we do have support from the college. And they also have to pay a certain amount of their own as they go through. So we try to make possible some scholarships that, you know, for students that might not be able to make it. Sometimes there's just other circumstances where students just can't go. We've had some other obstacles that come in, so not everybody can go. But there is an audition process. We do select people at the beginning of the year that are invited to go on the trip, and then it goes from there to make sure that we've got a representative group. So, for example, we have 7 lovely horns that are within the wind orchestra in general. We took 3 on the trip, but we took 3 really good ones on the trip.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, we are talking today on the morning show with the director of Carthage's Wind Orchestra, Dr. James Ripley, and with 5 members of the Wind Orchestra that we're about to meet. And the purpose of this conversation is to talk about the exciting trip to Japan, which the group just had, and their upcoming homecoming concert this Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. So let's let you hear from each of the 5 students that have joined Dr. Ripley today. Let's begin with Jack Kelly, who sits straight across from me, who is a junior biology major. Jack, tell us a little bit about where you come from originally and what drew you to Carthage.
Yeah, so I'm from Port Byron, Illinois, which is just kind of a small town in the Quad Cities area, which is by like the border between Illinois and Iowa. I was really drawn to Carthage, actually because of their band and music program. You know, music is a huge passion in my life, and, you know, I just wanted to further that in my collegiate career. So Carthage just seemed like a great fit, and, you know, the location is beautiful. So, yeah.
What drew you to percussion? Anything in particular? And at what point in your life?
Well, I've played piano since I was really little. So then I just kind of figured, having that knowledge already with kind of like the keyboards and stuff like that, it would translate really well to like xylophone and bells and stuff like that. And I've always been a fan of drummers. I love Phil Collins, and, you know, I just have been really drawn to percussion. So, yeah.
Just like banging on things. That's good. And you're a biology major, but clearly you are still making room for music in your schedule. I mean, there's probably a lot of biology majors who like music who choose to make it all about biology. You've not made that choice.
Yeah. I actually started out as a music education major, but then I switched last year. I still have a music minor, but yeah, those are the 2 biggest passions of my life. So yeah, I really strive to make music part of my career at Carthage.
Very good. Next to you is Rosie Ale, who is a senior accounting major. Rosie, tell us where you're from originally.
Yeah, good morning. I am from Two Rivers, Wisconsin, which is about 2 hours north of Carthage. I also live on Lake Michigan. I am an accounting major. I'm in my last year here at Carthage. And I also have been playing the clarinet since 5th grade, so going on 12 years now of music in my life.
Very good. And was it just a no-brainer that you were going to Japan?
Yes, I actually was drawn to Carthage because of their J-term program. This is my senior year and my 3rd J-term trip. Yeah, so I've been to Spain previously and Sweden previously. I also study Spanish, so I studied abroad in Costa Rica. So travel is a huge passion of mine, and traveling for music is absolutely amazing.
Fantastic. Very good. We also have in the room Ella Monk, who is the youngster in the group, a freshman nursing major who plays the French horn, one of the 3 horn players who went to Japan. Tell us where you're from originally and also what drew you to Carthage.
I am from Kenosha, always grown up here. So I kind of have a history with Carthage because when I was 7, I started taking piano lessons from an old professor who's now retired. But I used to go to Carthage every Thursday for piano lessons. Her office was conveniently right next to Dr. Ripley's. I used to poke my head in there all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. Carthage always kind of just felt right. I was there all the time growing up. So once I figured out what I wanted to do career-wise, I was like, well, they have a great program, and I might as well go on tours, see what it's like. And I loved the campus, and I loved the faculty, and then I ended up here. So,
fantastic. Where did you go to school in Kenosha?
High school was Indian Trail, so I went through Mahone's band program and then also Indian Trail's band program, and then ended up here.
Great. So who were your teachers then, your band directors?
At middle school, my band director was actually my dad, Michael Monk, yes, and then in high school, it was Jeremy Creedman.
Very good. Well, great. Glad you made all the choices you made. Wonderful. Next to you is Vinny David, who is yet another senior. You're the fifth-year senior in the group, and you are, looks like, a music performance major. Tell us where you're from and your long history with the trumpet.
So I'm from Carroll Stream, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. I started playing trumpet in fifth grade, and I initially wanted to play the sax, but my band director at the time told me that I had trumpet lips, so I ended up playing the trumpet, which I'm very happy for. But choosing Carthage, I initially came in as a science major. I was a biology and chemistry double major, and I wanted a place where I could continue performing, and Carthage was a place that was close enough to home, and that really has a lot of accessibility with that, so that's initially why I came to Carthage, and then later in my college course, I flipped to a music major.
So you made the opposite flip of Jack Kelly then.
Yeah, we're opposites, basically.
Okay, on the teeter-totter of life. Okay, very good. Great to meet you. And finally, John Cargill, who is a sophomore computer science and something else major. Oh, music major? Oh, okay, so you're a double major. You play the alto sax. And in the interest of full disclosure, John's older brother, Tom, was a voice student of mine who I thoroughly enjoyed teaching. So did you just follow your brother to Carthage, or was the decision, did it involve anything more than that?
Yeah, obviously that's somewhat apropos. He was already at Carthage, and so I would kind of venture up there and be like, oh, that is a school. That does exist. Interesting. I think one of the main things that drew me there was the accessibility of talking to the faculty, and I got to watch actually as one of the when the wind orchestra got ready for one of their concerts. I got to come and sit in the chapel, and then I went and sat in on pep band rehearsal afterwards, and that was really cool. I remember back to Thomas when I was touring the first time, I got back to Lentz Hall where the tours start and stop, and Dr. Shapovalov walks in the top room and is like, I heard there was a Cargill here. What's going on? And then talked with me some about the music department. So I think just the approachability of the faculty and the fact that they were clearly very invested in both me as a person, also as a musician, and also as someone with very holistic interests. When I auditioned for piano, Dr. Maslowski said, you're a Renaissance man, aren't you? And I feel like Carthage appeals to people who have these very disparate interests. I have a real passion for computer science. Like Jack, I'm kind of torn between like science and a kind of logical approach to the world, but also I want to be able to express myself and feel like I have a soul, you know. Mm. So it's very important to me that both of those things are kept within my college experience.
I like that. And actually, as I look at these, the majors that are represented by the students around this table, yeah, we have all kind of split personalities here, but we're glad music's a big part of who you are and what you do. For those of you just joining us, we're talking with five members of Carthage's Wind Orchestra and with their director, Dr. James Ripley. They are just back from a very exciting trip to Japan. We're going to have the students do most of the play-by-play, but Dr. Ripley, tell us a little bit about the sort of the length of the trip and, you know, those kind of particulars in terms of kind of the time frame.
Sure. We were involved together from the beginning of January. We started on campus with rehearsals and classes in I think it was January 3rd, we got back at it. And then we were away for about 10 days physically in the country. But then there's always the travel, right? There's the airplane, which is a fairly long flight. So we end up going, you know, one day and then we're there the next. But on the way back, we actually leave and then we return before we left. So I guess it turns out to be about 12 days by the time it's all said and done.
Wow. So I'm curious to hear from the students about those days ahead of the departure for Japan. What were you busy doing / learning? I mean, aside from the rehearsals, I mean, I think that's pretty much a given. Obviously, you're going to rehearse before you have a concert tour. But what else were you doing in terms of preparation?
Yeah, I can talk on that. So
this is Rosie.
We put in a lot of commitment for this trip because a normal J-term class is either 9 to noon or 1 to 4. But we actually came in for both sessions to be able to prepare for this trip. In the mornings, we would talk about cultural aspects of Japan and also practice and learn language, so some common phrases that we could use with the students in Japan. And then we'd have a break for lunch and then come back for our three-hour rehearsal. So we were very committed the 2 weeks before we left.
Wow. That is not a typical J-term. Wow. Good for you. So what would be some of the most important cultural matters that were addressed in those morning sessions?
Well, we talked about some of the kind of like serious cultural taboos, things that might not be apparently obvious to someone coming from Western culture, such as don't put your chopsticks into your bowl of rice, because when you do so, that's actually symbolic of offering it to like the dead or people who have passed on. And so you need to either put your chopsticks like across the bowl or on a separate rest. Things like that about the culture, just because it's a very different culture and a lot of Japanese tradition is kind of understood, not said.
Uh-huh.
So that's one example that I would offer.
Interesting. What about the language? Talk about the kind of phrases that you were learning in order to navigate what is kind of a impregnable language for most of us. I mean, someone who is not schooled in it can't possibly make heads or tails of it. What kind of things were you told or taught?
You know, it's a very different language than English. I would say the most common phrase that I heard actually in Japan, and if you're ever going to Japan, the best thing to learn is arigato gozaimasu, which means thank you very much, because respect is huge in Japan. So if you know how to say that and like kore kudasai, which means this please, when like ordering something, I felt like those were the two biggest things. But yeah, the language is just very different. I mean, we just kind of learned common phrases like take me to the hotel, where's the bathroom, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Dr. Ripley, how is your Japanese?
Oh, I'm ashamed to say that it's never really gotten much better than basic elementary phrases as well. I can do a rehearsal just fine. That works well for me, but that's a confined set of vocabulary.
Right, you're flat. You're sharp.
Flatto. And so a lot of what I was able to pass on to the students are those same kinds of phrases that have helped students in the past, but also myself, just work through the experience. And absolutely, please, thank you. Those key phrases in any language are what people need to know.
Sure. As for the program, and I'm tempted to ask you, but I want one of our students to answer this instead. Talk about the concert program, the repertoire that was chosen. I know from teaching Exploring Music right next door that, I have an inkling of what the program sounded like, and I have my suspicions about what Dr. Ripley was thinking about and putting it together. But what kind of a program are we talking about repertoire-wise?
I think we have a wide array of
this is Ella.
What's going on program-wise, because we did a couple pieces by Japanese composers, and we also have many American composers, and it is the anniversary of the band program, 150 years, so we still have stuff from the year that Carthage was founded. So it's like for the concert, there's going to be something for everyone because we do have a lot. It changes up. Like there's a lot of different styles. There's a lot of different feels within the music. So there's going to be something for everyone.
Very good. I know, Dr. Ripley, you were saying that when you get to Japan, the space where you first rehearse is not a very forgiving space or something. So the impression you gave me was you really have to be absolutely ready to go when you lift off from O'Hare Airport, right?
Yeah, most definitely. We were lucky with the band this year that our first rehearsal was actually in the concert hall. So that was a different experience than what the group has typically done. But I was so thankful because the performance level just elevated so quickly by being able to rehearse in there and a sense of how good the group could sound in a very short amount of time. Where the rehearsal hall that we typically go to is a very difficult place to make sound, especially after having, you know, a couple of days in the air and trying to find your embouchures again.
Right. So, anything remarkable about the plane flight over? And how long a flight is it?
It was a...
Here's Vinny.
13 and a half hour flight there.
Holy
and
cow.
11 and a half hour flight home. The longest flight I'd been on prior was 3.5 hours to Phoenix, Arizona. So
child's play.
Yeah, that was a pretty big change. It's very hard to sleep, but I was amazed at how good the food was. The first meal we were served on the way to Japan was salmon.
Wow.
And it was like it was delicious. So the flight attendants were amazing. They made it very comfortable. You got your own blanket, pillow, lots of movies to pick from. So you really had a pretty easy time keeping yourself busy.
Wow. What was the airline?
Japan Airlines.
Oh, okay.
JAL.
Yeah. There you go. Great. So you arrive probably more dead than alive, but safe and sound in Japan. And then how long before you actually had to perform your first? And how many performances are we talking about?
So when we arrived, we had like a recovery day in Kurashiki. The first day was very much so that everybody could kind of get their land legs again. And then we started the next day with rehearsal, and then we had a concert the day following. So it was still fairly quick as far as getting the first performance in. And then we actually had the sightseeing portion for a few days before closing up with a couple of concerts in an elementary school, and then we had a high school concert at the end. We did have one other concert scheduled in the Marine base, but that actually fell through for us at the last minute as it went. And some of that was due to the fact that those soldiers were shipped to the area where the earthquake had happened for earthquake relief. So
when we heard that news, I think a lot of us were concerned about what the potential impact might be on your trip. But it sounds like you must have been in places in Japan that were largely untouched by that. Is that correct?
Yes, geographically we were far enough away that there was no danger with any of the earthquake or the aftershocks, and it certainly has affected the country, but not to the point where it would have affected our travel.
Disrupting, right. So I'm excited to hear from each of you just some of your most vivid memories of what happened. But let's maybe first start with kind of the music-making part of it in terms of the specific concerts and or collaborating with some of the young musicians over there. Let's just get some of your favorite memories from that aspect of this trip. Who wants to start?
Yeah, I'd say my favorite memory was our very first concert in Sakio. I remember in rehearsal, Dr. Ripley telling us that the space that we were playing in literally would make us better musicians from being able to play in a space that captures sound so differently than the chapel here at home. And so in hearing that in rehearsal, I remember like getting to the concert and just having a different mindset of being like, I am about to play in a space that I've never been able to play in before, and I'm going to come out of it a better musician. And so you just, your body just kind of plays like you're a better musician. So that was really awesome.
Wow, that's great. That reminds me of when the Carthage Choir sang at Carnegie Hall, and Carnegie Hall is a similar kind of illustrious space where you just can't help but be a better singer and or pianist when you're on that stage and making music in that space. So very well put. Other happy memories, recollections from kind of the music-making part of the trip? This is Jack.
Yeah, I think just working with the students, I mean, they're all very excellent musicians. And I remember, I'll never forget when we got to have lunch with them. It was just such a enriching experience to, you know, like, we don't speak each other's languages, but like in some weird way we understand each other. And I think actually, you know, getting to know them a lot better, and then when we went into the concert portion, you know, it really felt like we had each other's backs, especially in the combined pieces, because it just felt like, you know, we were all a family in our section, and it was just such a great experience.
Wow. So you actually played with them?
Yeah. So they had their portion of the concert, which was, actually, both Sakio and the high school we went to, they had their portion, and then we performed our set, and then we did a few combined pieces with them, yeah.
But that was exciting. And you feel like you got to know them even though there was quite a substantial language barrier.
Oh, yeah. I remember Dr. Ripley said something like, eyes are the window to the soul, and that's very much just like, you know, it goes beyond language. You just see their faces and how, like, you know, you communicate and they react, and it's just, I remember John was doing interviews for this trip. He was tasked to do like a little kind of blog type thing, and I think what I said for my like phrase of the day was just, my heart is full. Like, it was just such a great experience to have with them.
Fantastic. Any other thoughts on the music making part of the trip?
So it was very interesting to go to a different country, because it was like, I grew up with a very strong sense of like the phrase music is for everyone, like being thrown around my household. And there are certainly examples of that, like in America and stuff like that. But to go, like Jack was saying, to go to a different country where you don't really speak their language and they don't really speak yours, and to look at someone and be like, really, the only thing that I know I have in common with you is music, is huge. And it changes your perspective, because you're like, I can't really talk to you about anything but music, you know? And you sit down in a rehearsal, and regardless, like, all you know is their names at this first rehearsal. And you sit down, and all of a sudden, you're close with them. Like, you just are. You have to play with them. You have to figure it out as a new section, you know, fitting into this different sound, because it's not just your American friends, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting experience to not know these people, and then after the first rehearsal, to feel like you really do, when really you haven't talked to them at all. It's a very crazy feeling, and I don't think I'll ever forget something like that, because it did take that phrase of like music is for everyone to like a whole new level, because it's applied, you know, everywhere. Yeah. So
that's beautiful. That's great. Anything else? Dr. Ripley, I want you to talk about a special guest who was along with you on the trip, and we're going to then listen to a little music.
Thank you. I was fortunate to actually be able to have two artists join us on the trip. Andrew Carpenter, who's our instructor of saxophone, joined us as my faculty colleague, and he performed and will perform on Sunday three movements of a piece by Paula Maurice called the Tableau de Provence, a lovely French work. And so that was wonderful to have him join us, as well as a Kenosha native, fairly close to our family, a certain Jacinda Ripley, who grew up and went to Jeffrey Elementary and Lance, and then finished up at Tremper High School. And so she came along to play a solo work for us as well on cornet. And then she also sat into the section to play with the band for the balance of the concert as well. So it was great to have JC come back and play with us.
So you have with you a recording of the piece that she played with the Wind Orchestra. You want to say a quick word about it?
Sure. This is from our last concert on tour that was in Hiroshima High School. And this is, believe me, if all those endearing young charms, it was written by Don Hunsberger for Wynton Marsalis and the Eastman Wind Ensemble recording that they made of, like, cornet favorites.
I own that recording. I love that recording. Played it many times over the air. And so here it is with J.C. Ripley on the cornet solo. So beautiful. Just a little hint of Donald Hunsberger's setting of Believe Me If All Those Endearing Young Charms. Vinnie David, as a trumpet performance major, I should think it was really nice for you to be able to encounter a young semi-professional musician with very similar aspirations probably to your own.
Yeah, it really was. excuse me. I haven't had that many opportunities in my life to listen to someone great at the trumpet play, I guess the cornet in this instance, but I really took a lot away from it, and I know that coming back, I've added things that she does in her own playing to my practice, and I think it's overall making me a better player, so I'm very, very thankful for being able to be there for that performance.
Cool. Very good. Beautiful. Tom Cargill, sounds like you had a busy trip and very satisfying in a lot of different ways. Oh, John, not Tom, John.
All the time. Yeah, to build off of what some of the other folks said about Sakyo for a second, Ella talked about this kind of language of collective music making, and it really is incredible, especially, as Rosie mentioned, because of the hall, like, one, you can just hear everyone you've played with before so much better, but also you can really tell what's going on around you, even in this completely new section with these new people that you've never met before. One big thing that we talked about was kind of what the goals of band are in Japan, and how that differs culturally from America and how they practice. And one of the things we talked about was kind of perfection of imitation and being able to play into the sound of, for instance, the senpai, the upper members of the sections, and the part leaders in particular. And so it was really cool to kind of be able to experience that firsthand without even speaking, where you could hear these other musicians and say, oh, they're doing this stylistically here. We want just to that. And on the piece that we were more leading, the Susa March, say, like, okay, well, we have to kind of lead them stylistically, and that was a really cool interchange. And as for actually trying to communicate with them, humor comes across surprisingly well, just with gestures and facial expressions and good timing. during lunch with the Sakyo kids, I'm a vegetarian myself, and so I had a bit of a different meal. And I had this orange slice with the peel on, and I was trying to ask them, like, do you ever eat the peel? Because I'm just curious, you know? And eventually, I was like you know, pointing at it and like eat, you know? Yeah. And one of them could speak a little more English in the saxophone section, so he was like, oh, and then he, like, you know, spread it in Japanese, and most of them were like, mm, and one of them was like, ooh, yeah, yeah. And I was like, wonderful. And I took a little nibble, and they were like, interesting. And then I was like, I just want to make it clear, and I was like, Americans, ie, no, no do. Watashi, I do, me do. And then, like, I don't know, one of the other saxes said something. And then, like, while no one was quite watching, I just went oishi and popped the whole thing in my mouth, which means tasty. And that just, like, cracked everybody up. And so I think you get, even with limited vocabulary, there's so much humanity that you can extract from that type of situation. So that
I think
really
especially cool. when you're among musicians who, at least generally speaking, tend to be maybe a little more open souls, and life is about connecting and communicating and so on. Very, very good point. Well, beyond the music making, of course, you got to see an incredibly beautiful and very different country. So what are some of your favorite recollections from what you got to see in the sightseeing portion of the trip?
Yeah, my favorite part was Miyajima Island. That whole day, we got to do a lot of different transporting. So we started on the bullet train, which was a really cool experience, and then we got to Miyajima Island, but first had to take a ferry across the bay. So a train, a bus, a ferry, and then we spent the day in Miyajima Island, which is very beautiful. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site with the Otori Gate and the shrine. So that was really pretty to see. The Otori Gate, Dr. Ripley said, is one of the most photographed places in the world, so I'm sure many people have seen photographs of it, but the real thing is just way more beautiful. And then, yeah, we just got to walk around the island. It was snowing that day, which they, our tour guide, Saya, had told us that it was the first time it had snowed this year. And so, of course, you know, the Wisconsinites brought the snow. But it was just a very light falling of snow, and it made the whole day very beautiful.
What was the island again?
Miyajima Island.
Miyajima Island. Very good. Another highlight.
I would just say, in general, just seeing mountains everywhere. You know, coming from the Midwest, you know, it's pretty flat. So getting to go to a country where it's just very diverse and the geology and geography was so interesting. I also was a huge fan of Miyajima Island. We actually went to a place called Iwakuni, I think it was the day after, and I got to do some hiking there on a short trail, and it was just so beautiful to see just the different types of plants and just how different the geography was there compared to the Midwest.
Yeah. Well, and I think most of us who've never been to Japan, we don't necessarily immediately think of mountains or it being a particularly mountainous country. And then you stop and think a little harder, and yeah, I guess there are. So, well, very good. Some other high points.
Well, when we were in Hiroshima, we went to the Peace Park and the museum. And I think that that was probably one of the best experiences there, because obviously that was a terrible event, but as Americans, you have the one perspective. You know, you have, this is how it was told to us in history, and to go there and to see a completely different perspective, and, you know, and to go into that museum. And, like, for me, one of the most surprising things is I'm a talker. I like talking. I love to chat. And it's, like, the whole, throughout the whole park and throughout the museum, it's, like, I had no urge to talk whatsoever. Mm. You're walking through with people that you know, and it's just such a, like, respectful and quiet place, and not uncomfortable quiet. Just, like, everybody's thinking about different things, you know, and to just be together and be walking through a place like that, it's crazy to think that not that long ago something that terrible happened. So I really enjoyed my time there just because I thought it was very good just to be silent and to think about all of that kind of stuff that happened and just the different perspective that it provided being in Japan. Mm-hmm. So I will not forget that experience. It was wow.
And that was towards the very end, do I remember?
Yeah. It's one of the last days usually for us on the trip, and we try to arrange a special kind of afternoon so that people have time to just reflect as well. So it's not a sad day, but it's a sobering experience for everyone.
Sure, very thoughtful. Vinny, you have something you want to share about the sightseeing portion of this trip?
Yeah, the most significant day for me was actually the very first day we were there, which was like our quote-unquote recovery day. And we went to the historical district of Kurashiki, and it was really the first day we've got to implant ourselves into Japanese culture. And, you know, we spent so much time talking about how different it is, but you don't really feel the difference until you're there. And I just thought it was really eye-opening just walking through this more traditional area, finding little restaurants where you have to take your shoes off and sit on your knees at the table that's 8 inches above the ground, and just shopping. And Kurashiki isn't as big of a tourist area as, say, Hiroshima or Osaka, so there wasn't as many like tourist trap shops. So
you're not seeing Applebee's and TJ Maxx.
Gotcha. So a lot of the stores you're going into are just what Japanese people would make and sell, and I just thought it was really an amazing experience to just put myself in there and really immerse myself in the culture.
Wow, that sounds cool. Great. John?
I would also throw my hat in with Ella and say the Hiroshima Peace Park. I'm a writer mostly for fun, and I found that I wrote three kind of proper, like, poetic pieces while I was in Japan. I have a notebook with me. You know, it travels. And those were after the meeting with the Sakyo kids, when I said a prayer at Miyajima Island and the shrine there, and at Hiroshima Peace Park. And the thing that really struck me about that place was how much the emphasis is placed on our responsibility as an international community to strive for peace. It's hard not to feel some sense of blame or guilt, but that really isn't the point of the place. It's to remember the horrors of the past, but also celebrate the will of the present. There's a fire burning there for the poor souls who lost their lives during that incident, and the English translation of a quotation associated with it is, "Let all the souls here rest in peace, for we shall not repeat the evil." And I think that's really powerful to me, because it is, again, about saying this happened. We can't just ignore that this happened, but we can use it for something. You know, we can use it to strive for a better future, as a collective worldwide community. Wow. So that was really powerful.
I can well imagine. Wow. Great. Well, Dr. Ripley, you've chosen well in terms of the students you invited to join you for this conversation, talking about what sounds like a absolutely splendid trip. And this all, of course, culminates in Sunday afternoon's concert. Will it be a fairly standard concert, or in any way is it also, you know, kind of a time of looking back on the trip?
We'll have the pieces that we performed on tour. We can't do all of those because some of the combined pieces had special soloists, but it'll be almost everything that we did on the tour. It'll be broken up into the Japanese pieces. We'll actually start with that, including the baseball song from the Hiroshima Carp. That'll actually open the concert. And, you know, the sidelight to that team, though, that's always worth mentioning, is that it actually started in 1950, so 5 years after the bombing, and the location of the stadium originally was right by the Peace Park. Wow. So it was a statement by the city to say, we're going to rise from these ashes, and the idea of the carp is a legendary creature that starts as this fish, but then as it goes upstream, it turns into a dragon. So there's this kind of transformative element about that in the city. So it's an important part of that city and that culture. So we start with that. We'll do the Japanese pieces fairly early. Then we'll move to our more standard repertoire with the solos. And we have an intermission in the middle where we'll be able to show some of the photos from the students that they took on the trip. So that'll be a part of the program as well.
Fantastic. 2 o'clock at Siebert Chapel, free and open to the public.
Absolutely. We want to have everybody there.
Dr. James Ripley, and with him today, Jack Kelly, Rosie Ale, Ella Monk, Vinnie David, and John Cargill. It was great to have all of you with us. Thank you for speaking so eloquently about